behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I am Ben Bolin.
And we've got a kind of roundabout topic today. I guess one that came about... this is the way it happens sometimes, right? It's kind of a spinoff.
How about we say this is inspired by a listener suggestion? Because when you sent the note to me, you said, hey, Ben, I've got an exciting thing. It's this listener email. And I looked up the listener email, too, and said, well... It's sort of in the listener's suggestion.
Yeah, and I think we even mentioned this in our last Nuts and Bolts podcast.
Yes.
I believe we did, because it was from a listener named Eric Delfino. And Eric sent in something, and it was just kind of like a question, really. It was more like, my dad does car interior design, and he's got a couple of interiors that he's restored, and they're really, really nice. And I'd like to know if you'd accept some photos of those. And we said, of course we'd love to see that. Mm-hmm. You know, please send them in, Eric. And we haven't seen them yet, but we're going to, I'm sure. I'm sure Eric will send those along. But it got me thinking, car interior design. Ben, we haven't even touched on car interior design the whole time we've been doing this.
We have... I listened back to some of our stuff, and Scott, you're absolutely correct. We have never done an episode on this. Now, we've talked sometimes about very high-end cars. We've talked about their interiors just because that's part of the, allure or opulence of that car.
The Rolls-Royce bespoke interiors.
Exactly.
You know, those type of things.
Where the hand-stitched leather.
Exactly. The teak wood that's, inlaid with the family crest or something like that, right? We've talked about all that.
And in our very, very first episode, I think, Luxury Cars in 2025?
Yeah.
Was that it?
Don't listen to that one. Just going back, it's tough to listen to the early episodes.
It's a rough ride. It's definitely a learning experience, but we did mention this, this group that for some reason decided it would be a good idea to build a waterfall in their car.
Yeah, that's right. And I think there was even like a Zen rock garden or something like that. Or what do they call it? A sand garden?
Yeah,
is that it?
Yeah.
Below the floorboards, like below the plexiglass floor.
Which is a little much for me.
Maybe just a touch over the top on that one.
I mean, you got to really learn some Zen Buddhism to let that intricate design go when you hit a speed bump.
I guess so. And when I think about what we want to do here, when we want to talk about interior design, I don't really necessarily want to do like a whole history of it or anything like that, or like the first materials used or any of that. Although it's interesting to think, like, wasn't Henry Ford using like that Spanish moss in his seats to begin with, like the stuff, but it ended up having some type of fleas or boars in it or something like that.
I had heard this story.
Yeah, something like that. And I mean, there's a million stories like that, along the way that, they've tried different materials inside or different fabrics or different, different fibers and things that either don't work out or they really do work out.
Sure. And in the age of plastics, the same cycle continues.
Exactly. And then, our ability to use, more and exotic materials like, let's say carbon fibers or wood or metals, all that stuff. So I think, we're going to kind of just touch on just a little bit of all this, but I don't really know if there's and I hate to say this, Ben, I don't know if there's like a clear direction in the way that I want to go with this, because I seems like there's so much to do with car interior design that it's going to kind of go all over the place. And I think that's kind of interesting in that we're going to get to talk about like, how women are involved in it, how our men are involved in it, the materials that they're used.
Fashion designers.
Exactly. What people are looking for, like what I expect out of a car interior, what you expect out of a car interior, what people in general now expect out of a car interior versus what they expected in, say, the 1920s. I think there's so many different angles to this one, and we'll try to get to all of them. We'll try to get to all of this, but there's so many little interesting stories along the way that we're going to end up kind of going left and right. And it's almost like a nuts and bolts auto interior design type thing.
You know what? I like that. Let's do something kind of like this format. Let's ask each other questions. Probably one of the best ways to explore it. And I want to start with one of the questions you just phrased that really, really kicked into gear for me. Scott, what do you expect out of an interior design for your car?
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, my car right now is a 2005.
Okay.
And I'm pretty happy with it. I mean, I think it's okay. And I, at the time when I bought it, to me, I bought it around 2007, I think. So I didn't buy it brand new. But it's a Honda Civic Si.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing fancy, nothing crazy, but it's pretty nice. I really like it. It's got the right type of materials. It's got suede seats, you know, these, almost like sport bucket seats, you know, with the bolstering and everything. And it's got red stitching on the edges, you know, to match, the kind of the Si design, I suppose, you know, with the floor mats that say Si on them. And,
yeah.
Some of the materials that they used were really, really nice. I mean, at the time, I liked everything that about it. I liked the inset things in the headrest. I like the red stitching on the leather steering wheel. I like the way that the shift knob feels in my hand because that's leather. I just like I like the center console that has, you know, a different type of metal that stands out. It's kind of a contrasting design.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of it that I really, really like about this car. But now that I look at it at a 2005 design versus what they have now in 2013,
sure.
Even at some of the lower end type cars, not that it's low end, but it's kind of mid range, I guess. Somewhere along the way, they've really, really advanced. I mean, when I look at, you know, like the quality, the way that, let's say, my door fits together versus the way that a door fits together in 2013, I notice a considerable difference.
Okay, so we're talking about both progress in terms of ergonomic design and progress in terms of engineering.
Well, ergonomic design seems to be okay, and that's, again, just for people who don't know, ergonomics is how things feel and how you can reach things, everything, how accessible everything is to you, really.
Sure, how the human body relates to the things around it.
Exactly. How useful is that interior to you? How can you get to, like, is it easy to reach from the steering wheel over to the, mm-hmm. over to the radio and make a change if you need to?
Can you see all the instruments on your dash, in one glance?
Exactly. Yeah, is it comfortable to sit in? That type of thing,
yeah.
Right? I mean, are the armrests in the right spot, you know, where they should be? Because that's something that, you know, along the way, some people have forgotten over time. But
is the steering wheel there?
Like, no, yes. But over time, really, I can tell, like, if I look into a 2013 car, you know, or a 2014 car at this point, there's a remarkable difference in the way that it's put together. I mean, I don't see little gaps like I see in mine. Even in 2005, you know, they weren't exactly perfect. And you go back a little farther, you know, there's even bigger mistakes that were made. I mean, sure, there's some beautiful interiors along the way.
Sure.
And some manufacturers did it better than others. But you're going to find that, you know, it just wasn't always the level of craftsmanship that it is now. And I wonder if you're going to be able to say that from now through the end of time. I mean, like, are people going to look back at their 2013 in 2020 and say, man, in 2013, they sure were making a lot of mistakes because look what they're doing now.
All right. Well, if we're going to the ultimate extension of this, then I'm going to tell you, honestly, that what's going to happen is that future engineers or historians or whatever will look back some number of centuries and they'll go, God, how dangerous they had to use their hands to interface with the vehicle. You know what I mean?
That's probably true.
And it's a little bit too out there for us right now for the presence of this, but the further back you go, it is true, especially the older cars that would have been considered mid-range in the 50s or so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when post-World War II has everybody suddenly able to afford a car, then if you look at just the dash on those things, then it's super wide. Everything takes a lean in to move.
To get to the center of the car, you've got to lean to the right.
Yes,
if you're
exactly.
The driver. Yeah.
And but there's another thing that happens here, which is sort of a parallel evolution, because racing vehicles, even if they were just consumer vehicles that had been kitted up, you know, these things started to diverge to the point where now, if you look at, say, the interior of an Alfa Romeo or something, it is completely centered on whoever is there, trying not to kill people in the driver's seat. And, this is a stark contrast to, say, one of the land yachts. Like, I had a Bonneville,
mm-hmm.
and a Bonneville, when they were still making them, man, it was still on those 50s rules. If you want to get to the center of the car, you have to lean in. Man, I was on dates and I would have to, you know, game plan. Like, okay, most of the car stuff that I am occupied with on the interior is way over here.
Mm-hmm.
This girl is like, on the inside of, like, have you sat in a Bonneville?
I have, yeah.
It's like, she's like 13 feet away. She might as well be in Alabama or something. And so I'd have to game plan that. And don't get me wrong. I love Bonnevilles. I love nice cars. To me, that is a nice car. It's just a, it's built for a very different driving experience.
See, you make a very, very good point here. And I wanted to move on after this, but I want to say one thing that you really hit on here perfectly, I think. When we talked about the, of course, first you said that everything's within reach. I can reach over, you know, still in the driver's seat, and I can lock the passenger side door. You know, with physically lock it with my hand on top. You know, I could reach out the window if I needed to. That's not possible in the old Bonnevilles like you talked about. But
right. But
in modern cars now, and look at any photo you'd like to of any car that considers itself a real driver's car. And there's a lot of cars that consider themselves driver's cars. BMW, mm-hmm. You know, Corvettes and, you know, things like that. You know, that type of vehicle, right? Look at the 2014 Corvette. In any photo, and we've talked about this in our episode about the 2014 Corvette recently, mm-hmm. it's designed like a cockpit. It's designed where the driver is definitely the person in control. There's no doubt about that mm-hmm. everything is all about the driver in that car. It's two seats. The most important seat is the left seat, the one that the driver's in. The passenger gets maybe a vent and the glove box, and that's mm-hmm. it. But it used to be that, you know, some of the gauges would spill over into that side. You know, some of the controls even were over on that side. And some of the smaller cars are still that way because they suffer a lack of space.
Sure.
So it's tilted to the side so that, you know, the driver is the one who's really seeing all this. And there's hopefully no glare on the gauges mm-hmm. and, you know, that type of thing. It's just so that they get the best angle. They can see everything they need to see and be in control.
So how about this? Let's go ahead. I want to broadly categorize interior design as we're talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
The interior design, agree, disagree, or help me defend this thesis maybe.
Okay.
The goal of interior design in a car can be categorized by the type of driving experience.
I agree.
Okay. And we could further specify this by describing some of that experience. So there's the racing or driving or performance experience, right?
I agree.
Another one would be a family vehicle. So this would be like a Honda Odyssey.
Got it.
Or, and then what would be some other ideas? The third one I have, which might be a nice segue for us, is a luxury vehicle.
Yes, luxury because, we've talked about some of these already, you know, some of these crazy materials and some of the stuff. Like, I was listening to a few videos, you know, just some interviews with some interior designers, some modern interior designers.
Okay.
And, you know, places that they go for inspiration. And a lot of times, you know, of course, they're artists. They love to, be inspired just like any other artist would. They take walks in the woods. They go on, you know, boating trips. They do whatever they do to become inspired. You mm-hmm. know, maybe they paint. Maybe they do something else. You know, I don't know. I don't listen to music or whatever.
Sure, yeah.
But I heard a lot of them say that, you know, it depends on the type of vehicle you're working on as well. So let's say that you've got, you mentioned like a Honda Odyssey. Let's say that's your project versus, let's say, a Rolls Royce.
Okay.
Now,
very different projects.
It is, but you know, really, in that, let's say that you're inspired by, wood, and you got like the idea to put a lot of wood in the interior of this design because a lot of wood is used in high end vehicles. Now, even in in minivans, the top end minivans, there's a lot of decorative wood trim, and you know, it makes it look very nice, very classy, very very finished, I guess, very very. Again, very classy. Maybe that's probably the best.
And it makes it feel a little bit more like a home to see the wood inside.
Sure, it's a soft feel, right?
Yeah,
it's something. Yeah, it's a pleasant feel, right? And they say that the only difference really between doing a project like that, like something on a minivan, is maybe the way that you use it a little bit, but more the materials that you use. Mm-hmm. Let's say that you're working on a headliner for that same Honda Odyssey, and you're looking for a type of material that's pleasing to the touch. Well, in the Rolls Royce, you might be able to use something like cashmere, whereas in the Honda Odyssey, that's not going to really fly because you're trying to use something that is stain resistant because the kids have ice cream cones that they sometimes throw at the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's really some of their concerns. They're like, the wear and tear on these type of things, whereas, it's not so much a concern in one type of vehicle as it is in the other. So, they get different considerations that way as well. And the inspiration thing was really interesting to me and the way that people found it. I mean, they were talking about like sports, and they were talking about, again, like bike rides and listening to music and reading poetry and, you know, all kinds of things that you just wouldn't expect would come into play in interior design for an automobile, but it really does, just like any other form of artistry.
Okay, I like that. I like they're saying that, and I think we can also further emphasize the point about the engineering aspects of this. You know, what is our car buyer doing inside their vehicle? Are they bringing a dog? Are they the kind of person who has a dog in their back seat? Do they have a kid? To your earlier point,
exactly. And cost is a huge issue, right? I mean, that's one that we just pointed out as well. I mean, again, you can use the same example. You know, with a cashmere interior, how expensive do you think that interior is going to be? And also, you know, how durable is it going to be versus something that they produce for a, you know, kind of a mid-range minivan that people are going to be using for soccer practice or for picking up the dog from the vet, like you said, you know, with the claws that are going to, you know, scratch the seat. And, you know, they want to prevent against some of that happening.
Yeah.
And some of these fabrics now, you know, they're fabrics that resist stains. They resist odors. They resist mildew and mold. They resist all kinds of course, sun fade, just all kinds of different fabrics. And, you know, a lot of times, Ben, we'll hear about this, and I'm going to take it kind of a different direction here, but
yeah.
Sometimes will call on famous designers.
Right. Oh, I'm glad you said this. This is something that you had hipped me to off air here. When we say famous designers, we mean designers that even the mainstream is well aware of, like Louis Vuitton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Or they'll have like a Burberry interior or a, you know, like a special, like the 300C, the John Varvatos limited edition.
Sure.
I think I'm pronouncing his name right, am I? Varvatos, Varvatos. Anyways, this is a designer.
Yeah.
Local designer. But, you know, these interiors are Carhartt or, you know, like a signature interior that has, you know, a brand name attached to it.
Yeah, you can see pictures of this.
I think they used to do things with even like Levi's.
Yeah.
Places like that. Like
can I be totally blunt with you on this?
What's that?
I just don't understand why somebody would take the money that they could spend on some great performance improvements and then spend it on having a brand name, a fashion interior, whatever, just because, like, okay, first off, it's your car, it's your money, I get it. All that, the caveat aside, some of these things that people are paying so much money for, Scott, are but ugly.
Yeah, a lot of them are pretty garish in design. They're very gaudy.
The emperor has no new clothes.
Well, I mean, look, I mean, for example, I think that, you know, I think everybody's pretty familiar with the Louis Vuitton thing.
Sure.
You know, the design that you see on women's handbags all the time.
You're right.
And then what they do is they just repeat that design on every interior surface pretty much. And
it's a brand, yeah.
It becomes very, very, almost confusing to look at. I mean, it really does, doesn't it? And I think that the interiors, a lot of times when they overdo that, when they overbrand the thing like that, you almost lose some of the sight lines in the vehicle. Like, you know, you kind of lose some of the detail in what the original designer had intended with that. Now, I know it's been taken over by, you know, Louis Vuitton or whoever, you know, or Carhartt or whoever's doing the interior.
Yeah.
But, I agree with you in that it becomes a bit too much.
Well, part of it has got to be that for a number of reasons, I don't particularly care for fashion brands. Anyway, it's always been sort of offensive to me that I would pay a company money to wear a thing that is free advertising for them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'm not telling people not to do it. And I'm certainly not going to be a jerk if someone gives me a ride, I'm hitchhiking and somebody picks me up in their Louis Vuitton branded vehicle.
Yeah, but, I understand, but it's just not for you, right?
It is not for me, man.
I understand. You know, there's a related angle to this that I think is important. I mean, I think it's something that we need to talk about, but let's do it in just a moment because there's something else that I want to tell you about that, if you've got just a minute.
Yes.
Do you? You promise?
Yeah. Okay. And Scott, when we last left off, you had another related angle.
Yeah. And you know, this is only because we're talking about fashion design, right?
Yes.
And it plays so heavily into interior design. If you think about this, Ben, when you buy a new car,
sure.
And you've got these expectations for, you know, what it's supposed to be like inside. And you know, there's a lot of emphasis put on luxury and fit and finish and quality and the materials used and everything. That's exactly like anybody who designs, and don't laugh, anybody who designs shoes or handbags. So if you get a high-end handbag, and I know, you know, a lot of our male listeners are thinking, oh, I don't really know what you're talking about, but I think you can understand this if you really think about it. Anybody who is expecting to sell a handbag that they sell for $250 or $300 or $500 or $1,000, it's a quality, well-made handbag that's not going to fall apart. And it's made with good materials. It's stitched together so that it's not going to fall apart. The edges match up exactly right. All of the seams match. There's nothing wrong with that bag, I'll tell you. It looks good. They look really well put together. That's the way people want their interior put together. So anybody that, you know, has put together something like that or a real high quality pair of shoes, the way the stitching is laid in right, again, the exact same thing. The seams, the materials used, just the way that the finished product looks, that's exactly what a car interior is like, but it's on a much bigger scale. It's like you're buying like a giant pair of shoes, I guess, and that you're going to inspect every little segment of that thing and make sure that there's no loose ends. You're going to make sure that everything's stitched up nice and tight. There isn't padding coming out anywhere.
It's like you're buying a handbag that you can sit in and take on a road trip.
Now, I know it's a funny way to think about it,
it
Ben,
is,
but
it's valid.
But it's a good comparison, I think, because that's the that's the quality and the way that these things are put together now.
Yeah, and what I like, you had also mentioned this really great article about women in interior design.
Yes.
From the New York Times.
Yeah.
Remember this one?
And this is kind of surprising, Ben. Now, I don't know why I assume this, but I always assumed that females were involved in the automotive industry interior design right from the very beginning. I just assumed that was the way it was. And I know that we had heard along the way a little bit of other information, maybe it wasn't that way. It was always kind of the old boys club. But I thought that interior design was maybe, for some reason, I know it's a very sexist type way to look at it, on my part, but I didn't intend it to be that way. It's just kind of the personal feeling that I had.
I think we could see this coming up in some respects, especially going back again. I don't know why I'm bringing up the 50s in every conversation we're having about this, but going back to that point when people were selling things as family cars.
Well, even think I know 50s, sure, I understand that, but even go before that with the coach building.
Yeah.
I mean, even the coach builders, a lot of that was a male dominated field. I mean, even everybody that was, fit and finish, tailoring these tailoring these interiors. Those were men putting those things together for the most part. I'm sure there were women here and there, but it really wasn't happening all that often. And the surprising part is that it really wasn't until, I think I want to say like the early 1940s, I think, when the first woman started to work as an automotive designer. She was actually credited with working on the interior in, I think it was on the Nash, I want to say.
Yeah.
Let me double check that as I read along here. But
yeah.
Her name was Helen Rother.
Yeah, we've mentioned her on the show before, haven't we?
Have we? Helen Rother?
I thought we had mentioned her at some point. We've done a lot of shows, Scott.
We have. And, I don't second doubt that at all, Ben. I think you're probably right. But, I mean, this wasn't until 1943 when General Motors actually hired her in as an automotive designer, which was a brand new title for her. And, of course, automotive design really was fairly new even at that point.
As a concept,
As a concept, because it was just kind of a way. They would just kind of, we have to have a seat in there, so let's just make some kind of bench seat and put it in, and it fits good.
Yeah, and prior to this sort of era, all of the ideas about a car's form came from function entirely. It was not really an aesthetic.
Exactly. So interior styling and the design department, I think they called it the art and color division of General Motors. They really weren't around until the early 1940s, late 1930s, something like that. I can't remember the exact date, but she came in, Helen Rother, around 1943. And, she worked on other things too. She worked on, upholstery. She worked on, colors and fabrics. She worked on lighting. She worked on the door hardware. She worked on, the seat construction, all types of, the interior design. And it was a big deal because, this female that had kind of, she'd broken through this glass ceiling, I guess, that allowed her to get into this field. And it was really, really interesting because she had worked initially as an illustrator for Marvel Comics. And then went from this illustrator for comic books over into kind of other design, like print design as well. And then they said, you know what, we could really use your help on this project. And they brought her in. Now, Dodge was still, just to give you an idea of what other companies were doing at this time, remember, it was still the mid-1950s, so 12 years later when Dodge came out with that horrible LaFemme design, which right. was, and that's 12 years after Helen Rother was at GM.
Which was just a huge mistake.
So Dodge was saying, they're still running with just these, now that LaFemme design was the car for women, supposedly, that men designed. Completely men designed the car. It was nothing about women.
It really made it into our Worst Cars podcast. These guys had the bright idea of saying, what are women like? Oh, pink. Let's just make it pink.
Let's just overdo that and see how that works, right? And all these bad designs. Remember, everything was about the weather, too. There was a lot with, they included an area for, rain hats and an umbrella. And
oh,
I think
boy.
There was also lipstick and a purse and all kinds of stuff that was just bad ideas. But, she had done, this Helen Rother had done so many really good things for the automotive industry. And she brought other women along with her. She said, this is something that we could really excel at here. And this is a good foothold for us. And she really brought in a lot of different people. So she was a groundbreaking type person in this field.
Right. And what might strike some people as unusual is that there is still a struggle of sorts for female designers in this world, because as we explore in this article that you had sent us, the female designer, the average female designer, can still be, statistically speaking, relegated to designing automotive interiors mm-hmm. rather than exteriors.
Yeah, because exteriors where the hot shots work, right?
Right. Yeah, the old boys.
That's right. That's still the old boy network, I guess, in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah, and furthermore, we know that this sort of situation is common, not just in the States, but around the world today. We see that although female designers are making a headway and working in this space for modern vehicles with notable success, we see that there's still kind of an inequality of employment opportunities.
Well, sure.
And
it's sad that it's that way, but it's kind of the trend is moving just a little bit, I can see, Ben, because there's still a lot of women out there working in this field. And of course, I'm sure that there are women that are working on automotive exteriors. It's just, we're just not hearing about it very often now. I mean, we still hear about the big shots that are out there right now that have been for a long time, and they get a lot of press time in the magazines and on television shows and things. But, one other really big success story that I need to mention here for women in interior design is Helen Elmsley, or Emsley, rather.
Mm-hmm.
And Helen Emsley, you may recognize her name from our Corvette podcast again. I've mentioned that twice now in this podcast. But
yeah, well, it's a good show.
She designed the interior for the 2014 Chevy Corvette. So, again, she's way up there in GM design.
Top of the food chain.
Exactly, for the interior design. But she said that, the big thing about this thing was, she, of course, had a lot to lose on this, because you're redesigning an icon. So, mm-hmm. You don't want to mess something up. She said that, she wanted to go with authentic materials and wanted to, again, here, Ben, this is where it comes up again, a tailored look. She wanted mm-hmm. a tailored look on the inside, like I mentioned with the handbags and the shoes or clothes or whatever.
Sure, yeah.
But the stitching detail had to be exactly right, and everything just had to be exactly the way that she wanted it to be, and there had to be extreme attention to detail throughout the entire project. I mean, from the carpet all the way up to the headliner, everything in between, everything you saw, everything you feel had to be authentic to her. So, if there is something that looks like aluminum, it had to be aluminum. If there's something that looked like leather, it had to be leather. It couldn't be, leatherette. Couldn't be vinyl. It had to be that. And if it looks like carbon fiber, it is carbon fiber. And, on down the line, it just has to be that way. And everything is quality. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's the, you know, whatever suede they're using, it had to be the top of the line suede. And she was involved with the chair construction as well. You know, the seat construction as well. So, you know, there's I think there's a touring seat, and then there's also a sports seat that she designed in-house, mm-hmm. and, you know, her team rather did. So, you know, it was really, like a top to bottom design situation there in that one, you know, that they said, it's all yours, take it over, do what you want with it, but, you know, make sure that it's
successful.
yeah, exactly. Make sure it's successful and don't sweat the details, right?
Yeah, right. Don't sweat the details, all of which must be perfect. I have another point I want to make, just a slightly different point.
Sure.
As long as we're talking about interiors, I call this is another sort of theory of mine.
Okay.
I call this the cup holder phenomenon.
Okay.
The cup holder syndrome. I haven't looked this up and seen if it's a real thing that someone else already thought
it's
of.
It's probably a thing.
Okay. So you remember way back in the day, because you and I are no longer, spring chickens or 2014 models, back in the day, a lot of cars just didn't have cup holders.
Oh, that's true.
No one knew why we didn't. And part of it maybe was that fast food was not as prevalent. Maybe people didn't eat in their cars as much. I don't know. But what we saw, you know, proliferation of these little plastic attachments, you know, put it on the inside of your door, or hang it off your dash or something.
They were add-ons.
Yeah, they were add-ons. And then someone had the bright idea, and this is to me the most exciting part of automotive interior design, is how to make things work better. You know, again, I don't really care about the fashion logo stuff. If you want to spend your money on it, fine, but I'm not going to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all of a sudden someone had this bright idea and they said, why don't we just have a car that has a cup holder in it? And someone else said, I'm sure there was one guy who was like, no, that'll never work. But there were probably five other people who said, okay, well, yeah. And then it happened in such quick succession, Scott. Someone else said, well, they got one cup holder. What about that guy riding in the shotgun seat? And mm-hmm. someone else said, what about the people in the back? And then at some point, probably in a minivan, someone said, you know what? We should have more cup holders than people, because we don't know what people don't like this.
Well, this will be no exaggeration, Ben, but I mean, there were minivans that were produced in the early 2000s that had something like 12 cup holders in them, or 13 or 14 cup holders in them. And, you know, they only seat six people.
I was going
to
ask.
Yeah, it's because, you know, they have some in the back for, you know, when you're, what do you call it? Tailgating.
Yeah.
You know, at a party or something, or at a sporting event. So they've got, you know, some that are in the back, like that are not near the seats, and they've got, you know, like four back there.
Yeah.
They've got, you know, three in the front, or three, you know, three each in the front, you know, so the driver can reach one to the left of the steering wheel, and then there's two in the middle, and then the passenger also has one over underneath the glove box, and, you know, they're all over the place. And I know what you're saying, like, it just seemed to explode overnight. And I was giving you a quizzical look while you started this.
Yeah, because you're like, right? Where's he going?
No. The quizzical look was this. I'm trying to think, and I've thought about this in the past. This isn't the first time I thought about this.
Okay.
I've owned a lot of cars.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, I've had, well, counting backwards from the one I've got right now, I've had this is my Honda Civic that I own right now, and
sure.
I've had it for several years.
Sure.
Just prior to that, I had an Audi A4. And before that, I had a Honda CRX, and I went on back and forth. I think the Audi was the first car that I owned that ever had even one cup holder.
Wow.
All of my other cars up to that point never had a cup holder in them. And I'm pretty sure, I mean, I'm going to have to really think about this. I can't remember if the Honda CRX had them or not, because it was a 1990 CRX, and I'll double check when I get off the air. But, I think that my Audi was the first car that had even one cup holder, and it had two cup holders that were way too small for anything. They held like a can, you know, like a 12 ounce can.
They held their espresso.
Exactly. Yeah. That was it. And I just find that strange that, you know, I had, I don't know how many other cars, seven, eight other cars that had no cup holders at all.
Yeah, and part of the, okay, so this is a real thing then.
It is.
And part of the reason that I think this is interesting when we look at the growth revolution of automotive interior design is that we can see how It goes back into, again, what you called a diminishing return. One day we'll build a car with so many cup holders, it will hold us all. No, I'm kidding.
I don't know. Are they still doing it? I don't know if they are. I think it's kind of back down.
It's back down. And mm-hmm. so now I'm looking out for trends in auto interior design, that are reaching like the same level. For a while, you know, audio technology is always a leader. There are some people who got stuck with some pretty crappy CD players because they just had to have one.
Mm-hmm.
I guess a few decades ago now.
Like disc changers in the trunk and things like that.
Yeah. Sure, yeah. Which was cool when you had it, but that's always the risk of early adoption.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. Those were factory. Not
sure.
All of them were add-ons.
Yeah.
And now I'm still trying to think of what the next big jumps will be. I mean, of course, we've seen the evolution of the cigarette lighter into the power outlet.
Yeah.
And we've also seen a rise in the amount of non-glove box storage space.
Yeah, I can see that. There's a lot of little cubbies here and there. And
up
people
here by the rear view.
People love to have storage. I mean, you have to have storage, and I think it's important. They're still building that into new cars. Like even, again, I mentioned that Corvette, but the interior, there's an 8-inch screen, an LCD screen, that drops down and it allows access to space behind that screen. Because in the Corvette, there's not a lot of interior space really to play with. There's not a lot of real estate there. And when you block off a full area with an LCD screen that's, you know, it's a big one, that's an 8-inch screen, you know, behind that, there's nothing really there. Why not make that usable space? So that's one of the smart things that they're doing. They're doing a lot of things like that now with space. Mm-hmm. Creative, clever, crafty, different ways that they're creating space where there was none before.
Yeah.
And, one last quick thing on the cup holders. Do you remember when you used to fold down your glove box door and there would just be two little kind of like indented areas where you could place the cups? Yeah. I think it was more for like drive-in type eating, you know?
Yeah, that was when you pull up to the drive-in.
Yeah, exactly. And the sock hop or whoever would come out and, you know, roller skate out and give you your food on the tray or something.
I've got a reason. There's a method to my madness here with my cup holder rant.
Did I say sock hop? I meant car hop. You know what I meant. Sock hop's a dance, I think. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, sock hop's a dance.
I'm not that old.
Boodle skirt.
I'm not that old, Ben. All right, so let's wrap it up.
All right, so here's my wrap up. The method to my madness, cup holder wise, the reason that I bring this up at all is because I want to hear what you and our listeners think will be the new trends in interior design. Don't worry, I'm not going to steal your ideas. Nobody hired me. Louis Vuitton is not waiting outside to talk to me. I'm interested in what will be the next cup holder? What will be the next thing that goes too far? Now, you and I got our chops busted just a little bit when, we went on a rail against having too much, video entertainment in cars.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And I think that LCD screens, or at least portable TV screens, kind of had the rise and fall. But what's the next thing? What's the next thing that will end up going too far?
Yeah, like a mild annoyance.
A mild annoyance. And that's perfect. And if you don't have one of those, then what's something you would like to see in cars of the future? Bonus points if it's super simple. So we'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think. And you can find us on Facebook, where we're Car Stuff HSW. Also on Twitter, where we're the same thing. Oh, wait, we have our own website. What? CarStuffShow.com. Go ahead and check it out for our blogs, all of our podcasts, some of which you cannot find on iTunes. And you can send us an email directly.
We are CarStuff@Discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.